Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Woodruff, pediatric neurologist and medical expert witness. On this show, we will talk about the intersection of medicine and law and how physicians can responsibly contribute to the legal system as expert witnesses. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Amy Fogelman, a primary care physician and the founder of High Rock Experts. High Rock Experts is a physician-led consulting firm that connects attorneys with qualified medical expert witnesses across hundreds of specialties. Through her work, Dr. Fogelman has helped match hundreds of clinicians with attorneys nationwide and has trained physicians on how to become credible, ethical expert witnesses. She also created High Rock Academy, which teaches physicians how to navigate expert witness work and build a medical legal consulting practice. Today is going to be part one of two. We're going to have enough to talk about, but we're going to break this into two different podcasts. So today we're going to talk about the business pitfalls. And the next time when we meet up, we're going to talk about the clinical pitfalls. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so this is great. Well, I think we just start out and maybe you can introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your experience as a physician, your experience as an expert witness, and then moving into this exciting consulting business that you created starting in 2018.
Sure. Thanks. So I am internal medicine, board certified internal medicine physician. I've worked as a primary care doctor for close to 20 years in the Boston area. And about 5 years into my career, one of my partners, there was a case that he didn't have the experience in this particular fact pattern. And so he asked me if maybe I would be interested in reviewing the case. And I said, sure. And it was like I loved it. I love being able to use my brain in a different way. I loved getting paid for it. And I loved the puzzle of the expert witness work. And it was a little bit of an adjustment looking at a case and not thinking about it from the clinical side, looking at it from a different way. So that blossomed and I started getting cases after that. And then in 2018, I started High Rock Experts, which you explained, but basically doing a lot of background reviews for attorneys and connecting attorneys to expert witnesses. And then I would get these questions from experts. And so I ended up creating High Rock Academy because just because you're a great clinician doesn't mean that you have the foggiest idea how to be an expert witness.
I can agree wholeheartedly. As we chatted briefly, I came from into this the school of hard knocks and made a fair number of mistakes early on that probably with some training that you have, I probably could have avoided. But now 15, 18 years into this, it gets a little easier. But you know, I was actually deposed this morning, and it never gets easier. I think almost it gets harder because as time goes on, because at first it's sort of like bliss. You don't really know what you don't know, and then and then the more experience you get, the more you think about angles and questions and things. And so I think it actually, for me, I'm harder on myself and create more challenges every time I do a deposition because I want to do a good job. You know, I've watched some of your prior podcasts and, you know, you really focus on integrity and being clinically accurate. And I think that's just so important. So
yeah, I know that's what you focus on in your podcast too. And that's why I'm so glad that we connected, because this is just such an important thing, litigation and making sure the expert witness is done with ethics, with credibility. That's like the foremost important thing.
Yeah, I'm totally in agreement. We both have seen it. There's some people out there that aren't following the same sort of pathway that we're advocating. And so, well, let's kind of dive in. You know, we've got a couple big picture topics. I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm completely excited that we're, like I said before, we're going to kind of dive in today to the business pitfalls. And then next time when we meet up, we'll look at the clinical pitfalls. So tell me what we're going to talk about today. What do you see as the big business pitfalls?
Well, there's a few that I see commonly. As I said, part of what I do is I connect attorneys to expert witnesses. So I actually reach out to some expert witnesses quite a bit. And so I can see this a bit from the attorney's point of view. One mistake that I see experts make, and I know why they do this, but is that they're slow to respond to an attorney inquiry. And that is a mistake. So if you get an email from an attorney or a referral service or a legal nurse consultant, if you get a phone call, you know, try to respond quickly. And by that, I mean within 24 hours, if you can. And that's because they're usually reaching out to more than one expert. And most of the time, they're going to hire the first person that gets back to them. And, you know, clinical experience is important. Expert experience is important. But if you're not responding right away, they're just going to find somebody else who's going to do it, unless you're from a very specialized area where there just is nobody else. Most of the time, there's other people. So as I said, one of the things that I do in my business is that I connect attorneys to expert witnesses. And so I will sometimes email experts. I'll email physicians. And sometimes what happens is that I will send an email out and I won't hear back from that physician for a week or even 2 weeks. And the problem with that is that I've already gone on to the next expert on the list. So attorneys, referral services, legal nurse consultants, they're going to hire usually the first person that they hear from. And so I recommend that you reach out within 24 hours of most responses. It just is the best thing to do. And even if you're on a busy clinical schedule, let's say you're on nights, just respond, say, hey, I'm on nights. Can we talk next Wednesday? That's totally adequate. It doesn't have to be, let's talk right now while you're on call. That's, you know, not reasonable, but it just has to be responsive, because that's what the attorney wants to know. They want to make sure that you're an expert who's easy to work with. And sometimes that's like more important to them than your actual CV.
No, from my standpoint, that is one of my sort of angles, is that I'm hyper focused on that. And so many physicians, I mean, don't get that right. And so many attorneys have expressed to me over the years how frustrating that is. And they express it as almost like a test. If somebody doesn't get back to them, they know that they're either not serious about it, they're too busy. And when really push comes to shove and they need to get a hold of them because there's a deadline coming up and there's a report due and there's a deposition and their case is on the line because they've got judges and they've got certain timelines that have been outlined, that they can't take the risk with an expert that isn't responsive. I would say that's probably one of the most important things that I find. And when I talk to people, is being absolutely responsive. My own thing is I always get back the same day. And like I've said on previous podcasts, when I respond, usually there's a little bit of information for conflict check. And I will respond with an email that says, hey, thanks for reaching out. I look forward to talking more about this case, but in the meantime, attached are my CV, fee schedule, and W-9.
Perfect.
Please take a look at those and let me know your availability in the next couple of days. Puts Brian, it right back in their court.
Perfect response. Perfect response. Or you could even add another sentence if you want to get like an A++. If you happen to know something about what the case is about, say, and I'm especially suited for this case because this happens to be my area of research, or I've reviewed other cases with a similar, fact pattern, or I see patients like this every day. That's the kind of thing that can be really helpful.
That's awesome. I'm gonna take that. After doing this for 18 years, I'm gonna take that. I haven't been doing that. So look at this. Yeah. I'm learning things. Responsiveness is so important.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is sometimes you're gonna know from that first email that the case is not the right case for you. And I don't recommend not responding, because even then, responding gives you an opportunity to create a relationship with that person that is reaching out. So let's say, for me, I'm an internal medicine primary care. Let's say that the case comes and it's clear that it's for an obstetrician, not, primary care doctor. You should still respond yes, within 24 hours and say, thank you so much for reaching out. This isn't actually the right case for me. This is, if there's ever a primary care or internal medicine case, that would be the right case. You should consider looking for OBGYN experts. Here's somebody that I know, if you happen to know somebody. And, I look forward to hearing from you if you ever have any primary care cases in the future.
Love the referral. They love the referral.
They love it. But yes, you don't even have to do the referral. Just the response is, again, they're going to think of you if they have that case. They're going to say, oh, Dr. Fogelman, she wrote back to me right away last time. I'm going to reach out to her this time.
And that, in that circumstance, I will, at a minimum, give them my CV, because I know that we're not going to engage. They don't need the financials at that point, but a CV can be filed away. And that's somebody that, that will hopefully think of me in the future. Which is important. It's all marketing, right? Totally. Every point that you touch is all marketing.
And you save their name. If you're creating an email outreach list, which I recommend that you do, you want to save their name, put them on your referral list. And then in the future, when you're creating a holiday card or, sending a update in primary care for 2025, what trends did we see? Something to be helpful for the attorney. You send it to this person. Again, they're going to remember who you were.
Yeah, a nugget that I do for those that are listening, I have a MailChimp account, and I have kept it for years. Everybody that contacts me gets added to that list. I usually send out something four times a year, and two to three of them are something clinically oriented, like an article, some new article as it relates to something within my field. And one is sort of the end of the year wrap up, like here's a picture of me and the family, that sort of thing. And the response, the ones that have something personal in them are huge response. Like we took a trip to Ireland and there's a picture of me, I've got red hair. I've got an Irish cap that my brother gave me. I have plaid on, and I've got a pint of Guinness in my hand and I'm in some little pub. I tell you what, so many, I had dozens of people reach out, and because seeing you as a human is big. So I didn't do that at the beginning. And I think it set me back, and that creating that list, which is so important. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an important thing.
Thank you. I think the idea of doing something personal is, you're so right, because like basically what are the attorneys looking for? Well, they want someone who has all the clinical credentials, and all of your listeners have those clinical credentials. And maybe they want somebody who's super, super academic for a certain assignment, or somebody who's, you know, more community oriented for another assignment. But the bottom line is they want someone that the jury's going to like, that they're going to listen to, that they're going to trust. So any information that you're giving them that shows that you're that person is only going to be helpful.
Yeah. And that ultimately, that's where it all leads. It leads to how are you going to present yourself in front of a jury and a judge? Yeah. And so, yeah, that's really important.
So
what's
I
next
wanted
in the business
to,
pitfalls?
Yeah. So I wanted to share a mistake that I made. You talked about the School of Hard Knocks. I had a couple of those myself. Mm-hmm. And one of them was that I did not use to track every single case I touched. You know, I would track the big ones, but if it was like a little personal injury case that I thought would settle for sure, I wrote a report for it. I didn't even think of it. I did not track that. And that was a mistake. Listeners, don't make the same mistake I did, because it was like a couple of years into my expert career, and it was right before the holidays. And I think it was like December 1st or something. I get a call from an attorney saying, oh yeah, do you remember that case? I have no idea what case he's talking about. So, oh yeah, we're going to trial in 2 weeks. And it was like, what are you talking about? I thought it was his job to update me about everything and keep me up to date on this. Anyway, obviously he didn't do a very good job preparing me for trial, as he didn't do a good job keeping me up to date about trial. So don't make that same mistake. What do you do instead? Just keep a spreadsheet of every single case that you are involved in. Every single case that you have touched, even if it seems so inconsequential, keep track of it. And then you send an email to the attorney like every quarter and just say, just wanted to check in about the XYZ case and see how things are going. If there's anything else needed, I'm available. And then they'll tell you, oh, that's settled. Or,
exactly.
Oh, that didn't settle. I think it's going to settle, but there is a deposition that's scheduled in, 6 months, or, the trial date has been set. But don't make the mistake that I made. That was not a good one.
a slightly different one that I'd like to tell people. So I've gotten busy enough that a few years ago, I received a case, reviewed it, got to the end, and I was like, oh, it was a defense case. Got to the end, and I was like, wow, this is really defensible. And then I was about ready to call the attorney, and something in the back of my head is like, this is really strange. Something about this case. And I didn't do a good enough conflict check. I had reviewed that case like 4 years prior. So yeah. I went back 4 years prior. I went back and looked, and sure enough, I had reviewed that case for the plaintiff side, said it was a no-go case. It had no merit whatsoever.
Right.
Internally consistent, though. On one side, I said, no go. 4 years later, I said, wow, you have a very defensible case. And then I had to call them back and say, I've got this really strange thing that happened. I can't really talk about it. And, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I didn't charge. I had hours and hours in the case. No money exchange, because that would not be ethical. And they went on to get another expert for the defense. And the key there was not to talk about anything because, you know, you really got to keep things separate. But conflict check. When you get busy, the conflicts show up because I have a pretty even distribution between plaintiff and defense, and I'm getting called on both sides. Today I was in a case and I was on plaintiff's side. There were three defense teams. Two of the firms, I had current cases that I was working on with those firms that are on the opposite side of the case.
Oh, no.
They did not want to talk about that at all. They were like, oh, by the way, how's that case? You know, they're just like, oh, you know what I mean? So anyway, that's when it really gets fun. You know what I mean? That both sides are calling you. Anyway, we kind of digress here, but we're spilling our hard knocks stories, yeah. Which we could probably do a whole show on that. But so we were talking about those business pitfalls. We talked about email. You have another thing, the discovery trap.
Yeah. Well, so it's about email. So doctors, we learn in our training to put everything in writing. But in the legal world, that is not the case because depending on the jurisdiction, emails are discoverable, which means that the other side can read them. So you do not want to put your opinions in writing. You do not, without the attorney asking you to write a report. You don't want to just, do a quick, you know, this was actually part of the reason I started my course is because I used to just recommend experts to attorneys who are the best clinician that I knew because, you know, as a primary care doctor, I know who all the best specialists are around me. And then attorneys would start calling me up being like, Dr. XYZ did a horrible thing. They put their thoughts in writing and it's against my case. And, you know, I understood why the doctor did that. They thought they were being helpful. They were kind of nerding out and, you know, going above and beyond what they thought they were asked to do. But no, never do that. That is such a newbie mistake. You have to assume that your emails are going to be read by the other side and only put business things in the emails. So anything about scheduling, but not about your opinion. If you have any questions at all, pick up the phone and talk to the attorney.
100%. That is that's in the 101 course. You know, that's like that's in the top 10. Like, let's talk about the 101 top 10 things that will destroy you. And that, yeah, definitely. And I totally agree. You know, it seems innocent, but it is not. And I would say more states than most states have that, where emails are discoverable. And usually it's the attorney that has to turn them over. I'm not great at keeping all my emails. So I put that on, if that comes over in a request for a deposition, I punt that back to the attorney and say, hey, I don't have a good system of keeping emails. You need to provide emails for the deposition.
Nor do you have a team to help you sort that out. And yeah. You know, the attorney should have a team to do that. And then I would say probably the most common pitfall that I see, and this one I see a lot, the administrative for a Facebook group, it's called the Physician Medical Expert Group, and people will post on there. Anyone can join. Any of your members can join. Just answer the qualifying questions. But
it's on Facebook. What is it again?
On Facebook. Amy? It's called the Physician Medical Expert Group.
Perfect.
Yeah. So one of the most common things that we get are issues with billing. And I think that these billing issues really come down to a lack of communication. I mean, listen, there are some attorneys that are evil, and I won't say evil, but they're not going to pay you. They're going to try to stiff you, and that just happens sometimes. So, you know, they're advocating for their client. They have limited budgets. And if you're not going to write something that's helpful, they may not end up paying you. So you got to be careful about that as an
expert. How do you, ever, I always expect a retainer, and I have been that way for almost my entire expert career. What is your feeling on retainers, and tell me if that's helpful, if that reduces some of this?
Yeah, getting an upfront fee, a retainer fee, is essential when you're doing plaintiff work. I don't think it's quite as important for defense work, and sometimes can be a little challenging because there's such a delay with insurance paying it. Usually with defense work, you will eventually get paid. It just is a bit of a delay. But particularly for plaintiff work, where there's a kind of a, there's a, the attorney will not get paid unless they win the case. So you need to make sure that you're paid when you still have leverage. So that's getting the retainer up front. That's before you release the report. That's before the deposition. That's before the trial. When you have those leverage levers, you have to use them. But the issue that you can get into is that attorneys think that the retainer payment is going to cover the entire initial review. And if you're in a field like primary care, if there's a huge number of records, like let's say, for example, they send you, you know, the attorney sends you 3,000 pages of records and you just ask for a 4-hour retainer, that is not going to cover it. You know, it takes me about an hour to review 100 pages of records if I'm doing it carefully and kind of keeping track of a chronology as I'm going along. And so in that case, what I recommend that people do is, first of all, if you have a field where there's such voluminous records, I actually recommend that the retainer changes based on the number of pages of records. So I will ask, that's one of the intake questions that I ask, is how many pages of records there are. And if they say it's 3,000, then I'll ask for a much higher retainer than if it's 300 records. So that's, you know, one thing that I do. That just, it stops the back and forth later on. If you do only get a 4-hour retainer, that's fine. But when you get the 3,000 pages of records, stop. You want to then, this is fine to email, say, I received 3,000 pages of records. I estimate that this is going to take me, I don't know, 20 hours to do this review. Do I have your permission to go ahead? That's communication.
Yes.
And then the attorney has the option to either say, yes, go ahead, or, oh, oops, I sent the wrong, I meant to send you the 300-page record. Let's send that one first. Let's have you review it and give you your preliminary opinion before you do a comprehensive review. And that's being easy to work with. So way, because the other problem, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Oh, no.
I was going to say the other problem that will happen is sometimes this is what happens often. This is what is in those Facebook groups. The expert will get the 3,000 pages of records. They'll do the review. They'll track their time. They'll track the, you know, 25 hours it took them. They'll send the attorney the bill, and the expert expects to be paid for all that time that they spent, as they should be. And the attorney is outraged that they received this 25-hour bill that they were not expecting, as they probably should be. Although, how do they expect an expert to get through 3,000 pages of records in 4 hours' time, you could argue. But again, this comes down to a lack of communication. And it is incumbent upon the expert to overly communicate in these instances.
Yeah, I think my rule, my case, most of my cases are thousands of pages, very complex. Usually, I would say half of my cases are related to alleged birth injury, whether it's hypoxic ischemic brain injury. So most of my cases are minimum 10 hour retainer. But if I'm going to go over that by more than 10%, or, you know, there has to be a conversation, because if there isn't, you're done. That's the only case you're ever getting. And that's how we build our business, how we build is through referral. And if you, what I tell people is, if you shoot yourself in the foot with one attorney, that's probably 15, because they may not say anything bad about you, but they're not going to say anything good about you. And that's the most important thing, is that word of mouth, that somebody calls somebody else. And there are these mysterious listserv out there of where these attorneys are all chatting with each other, and they have these lists of physician experts. You've probably heard the same thing, right? There's a lot of chatter out there that we don't know about. And the good, the bad, and the ugly comes out in those listservs, as I've heard.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. You know, credibility, that is our calling. That is our king in the expert world. It's your credibility. And so you don't want to spoil it by doing something as innocuous as not communicating about the time it's going to take you to review things. And I like that rule, more than 10%. I think that's a great rule. So thank you for sharing that. That's a great one. Just stop what you're doing and ask for permission to proceed.
But I think it's even one of the things is, if you've already burned through, but what you said is upfront, if you know this is going to be more, it's better upfront, as opposed to burning through 10 hours and then calling him saying, I need another 20 to review this, then telling him upfront, because they may say, no, I'm not. This case just isn't. Some of these cases, that the economics are not where, you know, where they can, you know, that they can have some expert spend $20,000. It's just the economics of the case are not there. And I think as experts learn more and more about cases down the line, they understand that there are a lot of variables in these cases, right? And the economics is one of them, which is important to both sides. I had an attorney tell me on the defense side that he almost lost. There's a huge contract, or at least his firm had a huge connection with a certain insurance carrier, and he got stuck with a bill, this sort of communication thing, and he had to pass that on to the carrier. And the carrier just went, and the firm almost lost that carrier because of that issue. Because, and so it actually can go beyond just on the defense side. They have to, you know, they're not paying those bills generally. They're passing them on to the carrier. And so I think
that's an interesting super perspective. Important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the bottom line for all of these issues that we've discussed is that the experts who get hired repeatedly, they not only, you know, they do two things well. They provide clear medical opinions, but they also run their work like a professional consulting practice.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should wrap up today, and we will, we'll be back for another episode where we're going to talk about the clinical pitfalls.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. This has been, I've learned a lot today, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.